The Fearless Podcast, in a time of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act.
All right, y'all. Welcome back to the Fearless Podcast. This is episode 79, and hope you're all having a great day. I have another awesome guest that I want to introduce y'all. This is Tag from Life Done Free on YouTube. Hey, Tag, welcome to the Fearless Podcast. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
And what I did, Tag, is I changed my selection of electrolytes because I recently had Joel Salatin on. Yeah. And it was probably my best intro ever. There was some malfunctioning on my soundboard, so the intro didn't play. And in the middle of the intro, he said, "It looks like you're drinking urine." So that was much better than my regular intro, but I figured I'd switch up the flavor so that there would be no confusion and nobody thought that I was like a blue-haired purple breather that drinks his own urine to save the H2O or whatever. But so the reason I wanted to have you on is I saw you on my good buddy, Billy Bond, the Permaculture Pimp Cast, and I heard you talking about this intentional community that you all have established, and I was incredibly fascinated by it because I know of people that have attempted intentional communities. I know of people that have attempted to participate in intentional communities, and unfortunately, I've seen vestiges of intentional communities. I haven't heard a lot of success rate, and I know it's a little bit of a challenge. So that's why I wanted to have you on. If we could maybe start out, maybe give us a little bit of your background and kind of what led up to this intentional community, because I think it probably has a lot to do with its success. So maybe we could start with a little bit of your history.
Yeah, sure. I think the first thing though, just to address something you said earlier, intentional communities, in my opinion, do not work. And so we kind of look at ours as an intentional neighborhood, and I'm sure we'll get back to that. And there's a very big difference between the two. But to my history real quick. So I spent 23 years of my life as the chief marketing officer for a financial holding company. So we had operations in 32 states, did about $150 million a year, had 900 employees. And my job was really, I was in charge of revenue. And so that was whether that was, you know, sales or marketing or shareholder relations or any of those kind of things. And life was good. You know, wife drove a BMW and, you know, she was happy and, you know, all those great things. And that all worked out great until COVID came around. And then one day the CEO of the company, and you have to understand that I answered only to the CEO. So there was two of us that basically ran the company. One guy did operations, one guy did revenue. I did revenue. And so anyway, he came to me and he said, "Hey, how do you feel about mandating the thing, you know, for all of them and all the employees?" And I said, "You know, I think this is a horrible idea. I think it violates the HIPAA laws. I think it's going to open us up to lawsuits. But more importantly, I don't think we have any ownership over our employees' bodies, and we can't mandate that. You know, if you want to make them put a mask on, I'm supportive. But if you want to do that, I'm not supportive." And so I thought, really hoped, is probably a better word, that it would just go away, TD. You know, and that was the end of it. You know, I brought a lot of money in and I thought maybe I had some standing, you know. But I'm going to tell you that those were an illusion and it did not go away. And about a week later, I got a email from him that said, "Hey, we're going to go ahead and we're going to mandate this now. And I think it's best if you do it." And it's so funny to me looking back at that moment, because it really wasn't about anything but control, in my opinion. You know, I bucked him directly and he didn't like it. And I've never asked him, because obviously we don't talk anymore, but I often wonder if he did that purely because I went against the grain, you know, for no other reason than that, but hard to say. But anyway, so when he said that, I told him, "Yes, sir, I'd get a meeting together," which I did. And that day came, and I don't know how much the audience knows about how the corporate world works, but everything's very orchestrated, you know, and so the CEO got up on stage first, and his job that day was really to set me up to do the deed, right? So he got up and he talked about one team, one family, you know, take one for the team. Let's look out for each other in these, troubling times and all of this baloney. And then he introduced me and I got up and told everybody I loved them and that we wouldn't be mandating anything. And I was quickly escorted off stage and lost my career of 23 years. And then I woke up one day and like, man, I'm unemployed. You know, I'd never been employed before ever in my life, not one time. And, you know, now what do I do? Do I just go back into it and continue to be a slave to the system and continue to be in a place where one person's arbitrary decision could take everything I worked my whole life for? Do I continue down that road or do I do something different? And so I came home and, you know, me and my wife had previous to that meeting and then after the meeting had done a lot of, you know, tribulation, you know, searching and trying to figure out what was right for us. And so we took all our money out of the market and built a big, beautiful 5,000 square foot, completely off-grid home. And it's kind of a super house in a lot of ways. You know, it's got many sources of water and got big power. And you know, I live like everybody else does. I have air conditioning. I have, you know, everything everybody else does. And, but that only took me so far. And then, you know, we started thinking about, you know, there's only so many hours in the day and community would really be great if we could find some people around us. And so we got to a couple people pretty quick, but then the growth was really slowed. And so we just started looking at how do we do it. I went on a couple big speaking campaigns where I went all over the country and spoke at lots of different festivals and, you know, things like that. And every time a piece of land would come up for sale, we did a YouTube video on it and said, hey, you know, somebody come buy it. And I get a lot of heat about this, TD, because people say, man, you don't know who you're bringing in. Right. I get it from an opposite perspective. Totally get it. But here's the thing. It's already listed with a realtor. So my choice is the unknown or the like-minded unknown. That's my choice. And so we filled it. And what went from just a couple of us that, you know, between the two of us had 80 acres of land to now we control over 1,200 acres of land and there's homesteads all around us. And we're beginning to control things like the political narrative in our county, the county commissioners, you know, sometimes we have someone even actually on the commissioners, but we don't this cycle. But, you know, they know what's coming when we show up and, you know, we get people on school boards and, you know, we have our own medical system we've created up here. And now we just spend our days trying to build infrastructure and, you know, trying to help each other out and grow gardens and raise animals and build buildings. I was telling TD before we started today that the community is a zoo right now. We've got many houses being built. We've got lots of barns being built. We've got firewood trying to be put up. There's harvest time going on. And so, you know, it's kind of a zoo. But yeah, so I don't know if that's too much of a story of the background of how I got here or if that.
That is very nice. I know that many people are probably very concerned. You mentioned that you took all of your money out of the market. So if you did that, how are you going to retire?
Yeah, good question. So I did a lot of things with that money and I went and bought businesses. So I own a company called Grid Down. I'm one of the owners of EMP Shield. I own Freesteading. So I just took my entrepreneur spirit and I bought other companies that I control, that I get to determine what happens. And then we put a bunch of money. Obviously we bought land. I'm debt free. I don't know anything on my home, my land, my cars, nothing. And so that's what we did with our money is I decided to put it in my own control instead of in control of what I believe is a manipulated market and another form of slavery. And so I just decided to put my money in a place I could, you know, I could have a direct impact on.
Yeah. And I like to bring this up. I just had Barry Dyke on recently and we were talking about this exact subject. The entire retirement system is, and the entire stock market is a wealth transfer. And it certainly isn't a wealth transfer to us plebs at the bottom. It's to the one percenters. And, you know, people want to talk about BlackRock, Vanguard, and State Street, and they're hijacking everything and they're buying up all the real estate. Meanwhile, these people are funding them in hopes to get their 12% rate of return that does not exist and that has never historically existed. It's just money magic. And, you know, they're financing their own demise simultaneously while losing complete control of their money and as it's sequestered in some tax sheltered federal trinket of tax deferred status. And meanwhile, there are other things that we can invest in infrastructure. A homestead is a perfect example. We got out of the market in 2008 and we relocated in 2014. We completely had to start over again from scratch and had to rebuild our bank and our wealth base and retool and all these different things. And at that time, I had coined the term food 401k, and it's just, we're going to reinvest in infrastructure, a greenhouse, 400 fruit trees and cows and all these different things. And these are non-taxable items that produce a exponential rate of return. And it adds value to the community. It adds value to your family, and they continue to grow over time. And you are taking back control of your food source, of your money source, of your income stream source. And that's really brilliant what you've done. And, you know, unfortunately, most people, even in a conservative debt-free, like Dave Ramsey type space, it's still this mainstream model of, work hard, get debt-free, invest, you know, you're going to get this exponential rate of return eventually, and then you'll retire rich and you can like cruise the world or whatever and drive a Ferrari, like all these idiotic concepts in the sense of, you know, when I was younger, that was my thing, you know, be a millionaire and drive a fast car and all these things. And then as you mature and experience some of that tribulation training, you're like, wow, this car doesn't mean anything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I'm trying to impress people that may hate me, but probably barely recognize the fact that I exist and wouldn't pee on me if I was on fire. Okay. And, you know, once you reevaluate what is important and why you're doing everything you're doing, you will see no need to participate in this synthetic synthesized system that is designed to take away your productivity. It's designed to hijack your life, to hijack your lifestyle. And it's really neat to talk about, I flushed everything. I invested in this, this, and this, and I control it, and I'm responsible for it, and I live by it, I die by it. It's on me, and nobody else is going to control that. And that's really cool. And, you know, and that's motivational. And here's, tagged it. And so you're telling me that basically you're 4 years in.
I think we're coming on five. Yep.
Wow. Yeah, that's impressive. I mean, that's a lot of heavy lifting in 5 years.
Oh, yeah.
So you went from like 60 acres to 1500 acres within the people within your community. And so all of these people that kind of responded and said, and looked at the property and purchased it, they did all this kind of more or less under their own power and finances. There was no kind of collective bargaining or anything like that, or.
Yeah, I think this is the single most important question, because my experience with community is that it does not work because the focus is on the collective. When we focus on the individual right, when we focus on the individual sovereignty, this is when a community can flourish. And so here where we're at, like on my farm, for example, well, there's no rules. You know, it's so funny, we joke inside the community. I don't know how PG I have to be on your podcast, but we have a joke in our community that says, when people ask us, hey, what are the rules? Because I get emails weekly that say, what are the rules? I'm like, there's one. Don't be
family friendly. We're family friendly.
Okay. So don't be a jerk. That's the only rule. That's it.
Yeah.
There doesn't need to be any more rules than that. And so nobody tells me what to do on my farm. I don't tell anybody else what to do. But through voluntarism, we get together. We meet all the time. We have festivals. We do all kinds of stuff for the good. I mean, prior to coming on to your podcast today, TD, I was over at a whole nother homestead pouring concrete with them, helping them get their next, you know, step, you know, ready. The 4 months ago, we built a guy a whole house. You know, and we showed up on a Saturday morning and there was a pile of lumber there and the foundation was already poured and 50 people showed up. And by the end of the weekend, that house was stood. And
this is similar to what the Amish are doing. They do financially operate in more a collective spirit. But I mean, you're basically doing what they've demonstrated with a libertarian flair that I very much like. And that is the key. I mean, well, we know that from our founding and with the Pilgrims. And, And historically, we know that that's a fact. And you're basically reinvigorating it and eliminating the victim. Because what I've experienced, you know, is you get a lot of people that are interested, you know, and they'll come and they'll visit. And you know, after 48 hours of conversations, maybe you'll have a couple significant, substantial conversations, and you'll know that if they're a giver or a taker.
Yep.
And unfortunately, in society, 80 to 90% of people are, okay, I'm going to move here and in proximity to you. And what advantage, like, what am I going to get out of that? Like, how is this going to advantage or benefit me? And that's like the immediate red flag of like, no, if you want a community and you want support, you bring your assets to the community, you bring your value, you bring your solutions. You know, Jim Rohn says, don't bring your problems to the market, bring your solutions. So you bring your solutions to the market. Yeah. You bring it to your community, you bring your value, you bring your expertise, whatever maybe niches that you might have or explicit skills or assets or different things, you bring those in and say, hey, how can I help? How can I bring value? And then the community will say, sure. Yeah, this is great. You know, if you want to help here, hey, in turn for you helping here, you know what? I can do this and I have this value and I had these assets. And that's how that synergy takes place. So y'all started with just a couple families, and with the 1,200 acres, how many folks are involved now?
Okay, so this is actually a long topic because I have to kind of explain what how I define community, because community, a lot of people look at as the singular thing, and it's not. If you look at it as singular, I think you miss out on so much. So to me, I look at community as interlocking circles, and there's many of them. And so, like, for example, the clan, what we consider the clan. So the tag clan is me, my wife, my family here, my farm, my clan. My clan is sovereign, and everything is built on the sovereignty of the clan, everything. But if you get a couple clans together, you got a crew, right? And so if you can get 8 or 10 clans together, now you got a crew that can build barns and can do those kinds of things. Right. You get a bunch of crews together, you get a mag. And if you get a bunch of mags together, then it forms the mind. And so we look at it as four gigantic interlocking circles. So when you ask me how big the community is, which one? So if you start at the outside of the mag, like, for example, I sit on a board with Joe Salatin for a process. So I consider him part of my mind, like-minded, right? All over the globe. We do. I have other ones in other states we do commerce with, and we do things like that. So if you look at the mind, it's many thousand. You know, if you look at the mag and you just talk about it from a geographical perspective, within 200 miles, there's 1,000 of us. But if you look at it through 100 miles or, you know, 75 miles, there's probably 80 or 90 of us. You know, but, you know, there's a couple things you said along this that are super, super, super important. You know, the takers versus the givers. We have figured out a way how to vet all of that. And when really it kind of vets itself. Let me explain, because I think this is really important as people are building community. If someone's going to move down to where I live and invest $250,000 of their own money or whatever it is, right? $100,000, whatever, to buy land, to build, to put that infrastructure in, you're weeding out a lot right there because they have skin in the game, right? So that's a whole lot. The other thing is, and I have to explain this to people a lot, is that just because you come down here and buy a piece of land doesn't mean that you get to pick up the phone and say, hey, well, everybody come build me a house. That's not how that works. You earn it. There's a credit score, and it's nothing we write down. It's nothing that's on paper. It's none of that stuff. But at the end of the day, if you call for help, everybody will show up if you're helpful. If you're not, they won't. It's simple. You know, if tomorrow I wanted to do a home, we call them homestead rotations. If I wanted to do a homestead rotation on my property to put firewood up, there'd be 75 people here, but it's because I attend every event. I help every farmer. I'm involved. And so we have people in our community who are barely involved. And then when they come to me and go, how come only 4 people showed up? I have to tell them the truth. So it's kind of self-fixing in a lot of ways.
But you're a meanie.
I'm going to help them who help me. I'm a busy guy.
That's right.
You know, but it works really well. We don't have a lot of drama. We don't have a lot of those problems. You know, we've had some bad things happen along the way, little things, you know, but generally it runs pretty smooth. And I would never go back. It's been an amazing experience.
This is fascinating. Are you going to do some type of documentary?
You know what's funny is, are you who Jim Gale is?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So Jim Gale, Joe Salatin, Theo Fleury, you know, the hockey player, Pat Miletic, yeah, the MMA guy. So we all sit on a thing called the Earth Council. And so we spent a lot of our time working on really kind of how to make bigger differences through parallel, alternative, societies, economies, the way we do things. And so we're looking at doing some of these things. And because all of them bring a different solution to the table. All of them have a piece of the, the equation, whether we're talking about the medical system or the food system or the justice system or, whatever it is. And so there's been some talks about it, but I have nothing underway as far as building a documentary. I got too much concrete to pour.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And, we've been participating with medical sharing through Samaritan Ministries now for, 15 years. And that's a great parallel system that has proven efficient and effective. And that's benefited us tremendously only because one of my children figure out a way to catastrophically injure themselves like almost once a year for the last couple of years. But there are these solutions. There are these non-governmental solutions that don't require bureaucracies or NGOs or anything. And that's what's more fascinating now. That's actually very beneficial to our American society. It's tragic in some ways to see how those in the Carolinas and East Tennessee have been treated by our government that fleeces us and steals our liberties. But what is so encouraging is watching all these churches and individuals and the parallel. This is exactly when you talk about parallel society, parallel community, and you talk about that overarching community, not geographically located in any particular place, is we are watching that in action. And if that just as far as proof of concept, the death toll and the negative impact of this weather event would be 10 to 20 fold what it actually is. And hey, God is sovereign and God favors his children, and God blesses action and people with integrity that believe something, and their belief is so self-evident. It's shown in their actions. So I don't ever want to cut God out of the equation, but we're watching people, community, real community, and then parallel community outside of that location just work together in concert, selflessly. And it is inspiring to watch, and especially in light of this new Clown World 3.0, psychological operation that we're all trying to be, that's just it infects every aspect of our life. It's very encouraging. And what you're doing, if somebody could document that for this Zoomer generation, because that's real. Don't write a book or anything, that takes too much effort, but on a video, preferably less than 15 minutes or something like that. I'm joking a little bit, but
Yeah, I've done a lot of videos on community and, kind of how it works. But there's so much stuff you said there, TD, medical system. We found a like-minded doctor in our area who was sick of all of it and helped him open a clinic. At the time, back in 2021, when that whole process first started, it was one little clinic. He took no insurance. We all paid him $75 a month. Today, there's 9 clinics across the northeast corner of our state, and he's exploded. And it's his business, sovereignty. It's his. We have no say in it. We have none of that, but we're all members of it. And so we built our own medical system here. And, that works out. I love it. I'd never go back. They have little lockers outside of the clinic, and it's really neat when you call in and say, hey, I've got blah, 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 and they need to prescribe you something, let's say, for an example. they say, hey, it's in locker number two, and here's the combination. It's just,
oh, wow.
Yeah, it's just totally Midwestern. You know, you walk right in the door, there's a gigantic sign that says Common Sense Medicine. And, you know, we continue to build the systems. Because here's the thing, and this is my opinion. I think that every time we have to ask permission, and if you're curious who you have to ask permission from, open your checkbook. That's all you got to do. But every time we have to ask permission is an avenue of attack, in my opinion. It's a way for them to put their thumb on you. We call it stroke here. And so our mission inside our community, and also in the communities we're now reaching all over the country, our mission is to eliminate the stroke. And so you ask any general of any you know, conflict, I'm a veteran. I promise you, they will tell you. If you ask them how many fronts you want to fight a battle on, they'll tell you one. Because every time you have to fight an additional battle, right, it splits your resources. And so my goal is to minimize the number of fronts that I can be, a thumb can be put on me. This is why I'm off grid. This is why I produce my own energy, why I have my own water, why I have no debt, why we grow our own food, why we do all of these things. And I think through that method, if enough of us do it, we don't have to fight them. We just have to ignore them. And if we can create those parallel systems and we can do that, and I can do commerce in different places, different communities, what we call yoking up around here. If we can do those kinds of things, it fixes itself, much like how we vet a community.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there, but I mean, the concepts that you're speaking of are ancient, mm-hmm. and they're historically true. Mm-hmm. How do you re-educate people, you know, between the government school system, the Prussian model, and the worker bee mentality, and the collective, the hive mind, and the greater good? How does that, I guess it's just a self-sorting system, or?
I think there's more to it than that, TD. I think, you know, that people our age, so, you know, the what's left of Generation X, and, you know, some of the generations that come beyond us. I mean, you know, we reach them by every time we go out and speak, and every time, you know, we talk about these ways, and we, you know, we do the best that we can, but I think there's a bigger way out there that I think we really have to focus on, and that we focus on heavy here. And this is not a anti-homeschool message I'm about to give, but the one thing about homeschooling is that you're saving your children, but what about the other ones? And so we focus on changing the directive of schools. We have a particular school that we put a lot of energy into up here, and we help control the narrative of what goes on. And I'll give you an example. In my state, they were the only school in the state not to mandate the mask. They teach cursive writing. They teach the Declaration of Independence. They teach the Bill of Rights. They teach all of the things that are important. And it's because we're active, we're involved, we've got people on the school board. And so we're actually trying to take it to fixing the next generation. Because there's only so much I can do on a podcast. There's only so much I can do standing in front of 1,000 people giving a conversation. I'm way more interested in how do I help educate that next generation of homesteaders, that next generation of freedom lovers. And so that's how we're doing is we're actually attacking. I say attacking. I don't mean attacking in a physical of any type of sort. We're spending attention on a school district. And for us, how it worked, TD, we picked one. There's three main school districts around me. Went and met all the board, figured out, okay, which one was the easiest to influence. And then we went after it. And now we're going to, every time there's a school board position up, we're going to do it. We have actually put teachers in the school. I've had people that have moved here from, I have a great couple who I've become great friends with who moved here from Phoenix, Arizona, and she's a teacher by trade. And so guess where she's working, right? And so we're working hard on trying to create our own town. You know, not a post office and a bar and an area here that is promotes freedom and promotes that sovereignty of the individual and promotes, you know, those things and doesn't teach critical race theory and doesn't teach gender studies and doesn't do those things. Because, again, I want to affect the next generation, not just my own.
Wow, that's fascinating. I've never heard of that, anybody that's done that as well. So you're kind of on a frontier. And, you know, and I think a lot that has to do with, you're speaking of the panel you're on with like Miletic and Salatin, mm-hmm. is having these counselors with substantial wisdom and experience that have done state jujitsu type stuff. and learning tricks of the trade, maybe leverage and different things like that, and just getting their input.
Oh yeah.
Because we friends of ours are visiting, and they're from Iowa, and we're talking about butchering animals and what the regulations are. And we were like, well, have you considered this and that, like mobile butchery, and, you know, get it to the person's property and then charge them for a service and different things like that. And there's just these little angles that you can take to avoid the bureaucracy and sidestep the bureaucracy and get and insulate yourself and get them out of the way. And then you can still get to do what you want to do. And you know that it's very good to be aware of what's going on. It's very good to recognize encroachment to our liberties and everything else. But if there's no action steps, if it's just, you know, so many people, especially with social media, you know, the sky's always falling. And are you aware of this next terrible thing that's this week? And, you know, and they get lots of views and all this stuff. And thanks for telling us and making us aware of this. But like, if there are no actionable solutions or illustrations from others, like, hey, look what Tag's doing. Like, he's doing all the stuff that 90% of the people that you talk to, they would say, you can't do that. That's impossible. Like, he could have done that. And, you know, and then you keep the consistency. That's the only reason our YouTube channel still exists. They've tried to nuke us like 1,000 times and demonetized us. And now we're somehow remonetized or whatever. And the only reason I've wanted to keep our YouTube channel is like, I want people to be able to go like, oh yeah, you remember those Texas boys? You remember those little boys with like their hammers and Sawzalls that cleared that whole like 2-acre deal with like a Milwaukee Sawzall? I wonder what those crazy kids are doing. You know what I mean? And so, you know, I stick around for historical purposes to encourage other people. And hey, look what those crazy cats are still doing, you know? And we say, observe the masses and do the opposite. I mean, you know, the social planners have brainwashed and manipulated the masses, and only a small remnant of those people are going to wake up. And I mean, this is just a historically proven fact. It's unfortunate. Wouldn't we want this great revival and just everybody's eyes to be open and to see? That's not a reality. And that's a good thing, because that would create probably more problems from a larger, it's good and bad, but it is the reality, and the importance of reality, recognize reality and respond, you know, that just a lot of people are never going to get it. The older generation, that have got so much indoctrination, and they're so mainstream, and they're completely disconnected from any type of alternative information or thought, you know. It's just, you know, so, but that's brilliant about training that next generation and putting a system in place. I mean, that is critical and key. And, you know, and that is why we homeschool. And from our perspective, you know, we have six children, and to us, it's very important. You know, we are as Americans, we are a dying inverted demographic, you know, so it is our goal to, you know, not just have children and raise them, but live a living legacy with them. So we're building, growing, and doing. And that's why we purchased the different parcels of land we have, because it's like, if we can, in real time, if we can gift them their inheritance, right, in real time, and then help fund and finance their dream and their goals, and we can do that collectively as a family, that's community building in and of itself. And then you'll have multiple homes, multiple properties, and maybe you'll only need one tractor. You know, oh, everybody doesn't need a tractor. You know, we have a tractor that we can share as a family. Dad owns the tractor or whatever. And then, you know, and then they spin off their own different ideas and businesses, which is what's happening now. My boys, they had some super explosive growth on YouTube in a 3-month window, and our website sales exploded and ad revenue exploded. They took all of their money and they bought a mobile sawmill, and they were doing some mobile milling, and then they bought 2 work trucks. They bought a F-350 and a Tacoma, and they started a handyman business, and their business has just blossomed. And, you know, now it's feeding them, and this, you know, and this is this living legacy that we're experiencing. And, you know, some people have all their money in the stock market and, oh yeah, check out my, annual earnings. I got a 12% rate of return. And when you look at the value of investing in people and in your family, I mean, what's the rate of return on that? Like, you know, 20 acres, 2,400 square foot house, a couple trucks, an active business, neighbor stopped by yesterday. Oh, hey, you're the boys that do the stuff. And like, yeah. And hey, come check this out at my house. Or, you know, the local auto store is like, hey, we need somebody to install these signs. And the boys, oh yeah, we do that, you know, and they sign the deal like same day. And I mean, the rate of return on that, you can't put a number on it. And it just, the exponential growth of that is fascinating. And if people could get a hold of that, it could be revolutionary.
Yeah. Well, I think land is money is the land of make-believe anyway. And so you're much better off having knowledge, having skills, or having assets, you know, than having money. Money has almost no value to me personally. And, you know, if I get money, I'd rather dump it into something that I actually own. But I've watched some of your guys' videos. I love that your boy's building his own house, by the way. That's super cool. You know, we built our own house. I'd never built, you know, wasn't really my world, but I did a little bit of it when I was in high school, but it's a great experience, you know, to go through. And hey, I'm going to tell you something too. We have many people in our community who homeschool. I'm just telling you from a community effort, but even those that homeschool are involved in the school efforts because we are really trying to reach that next generation. We're trying because I don't know how we can stop this without it. I don't know how we can actually make it. Corruption is so deep and it's at every single level. We got to find another way.
Yeah. And they, you know, one of these Mockingbird, there's a fella here in Denton and he's a big, big real estate guy. And his name's escaped me. Wexler, I think his name is. And he just exposed that local municipality and school district, you know, they're fudging all the property tax numbers and he's showing how they're manipulating it and they know it's going to collapse and all these different things. And this is all predicated on this, you know, school bond bills and all this stuff. And it is a takedown and a shakedown and they're creating a house of cards that they know is going to collapse. So, you know, if people can get actively involved and steer the ship, you know, only good things can come from that. If everyday people that are paying attention and know what's up and are familiar with our founding documents and what natural law is and what law in general is, because the predominance of what's going on here, you know, they always want to paint anarchy, you know, and voluntarism and all this stuff. And what's going on is a corporate deep capture of everything is completely de facto and absolutely on paper illegal. And, you know, we have been deep captured by bureaucracy and transnational monolithic mega corporations. And that's what's going on.
Yeah, I have a very distinct advantage because I grew up in that industry. And, you know, but here's the thing. If you're an entrepreneur, if you believe in yourself, you'll be fine. It's really nothing harder than that. You know, I've opened many of businesses in my life and continue to do it. A right deal comes tomorrow, I'll open another one, you know, but we can absolutely beat them. We just have to take responsibility and accountability and you know, specifically for ourselves and our own needs, our children, what they're learning, what they're eating, equally important, you know, but I think it'll work out just fine. But, you know, the other thing I really wanted to stress on to what you said there is, you know, one of the reasons our community works so well. And I want to tell you, TD, you ask Billy Bond this. Next time you talk to Billy, you ask him this question. ask him what's special about the Kansas community. Ask him that question. He'll tell you it's like no other. He will absolutely tell you that. It's because it's full of great leaders. That's the thing, you know, and you can't lead if you can't follow. And, you know, we have a committee that's the political action committee that goes and records the county commissioner meetings. And, you know, we have all of those different little pieces, and people take charge when they need to, and they follow when they need to. And because our community is full of those great leaders, it really allows it to continue on. You know, I get a lot of credit for building the community, but the truth is I played such a little role in it. You know, I went and helped. I got them here. Right. I did those kinds of things. But when they get here, it's the rest of the community that makes it all work. It's not me.
Yeah. The thing about leadership is you have to find them. I don't think you teach that. And, you know, there's a biblical illustration when Moses sent in the 12 spies. You know, he picked them from the leadership. They were the leaders of their tribe. So these were the cream of the crop. And Moses said, go in and spy out the land because we're going to take it, right? And you had these 12 spies go in, and you only had two of them. You had Caleb and Joshua, and they were the only two that had a good report. And, you know, if you go and reread that, and that is a textbook on leadership, you know, Caleb and Joshua had to be willing to follow orders and follow Moses, and then they heard the promise and they stood on the promise, you know, and they were like, let's go take the land. And what's fascinating about the story is the rest of the cream of the crop said, no, we should all go back to Egypt and die. And what are y'all doing? You know, and then Caleb and Joshua suffered them for 40 years. You know, and God said, you know, well, you don't believe me. I'm going to wipe y'all out. And then 40 years go by and God says, okay, I said I was going to wipe you out. They're all dead. Let's go take it. And Caleb's like, let's go take it. I'm just as strong as I was 40 years ago, you know, and there's such a story in that when it comes to leadership. And, you know, those two tribes, the tribe of Judah and the tribe of Ephraim, they went into the land with their leadership. You know, all these other tribes were at such a distinct disadvantage because their leadership got wiped out. And Caleb was from the tribe of Judah, you know, and we know that Christ comes from the tribe of Judah. But there's an incredible story on leadership, and leaders aren't made, leaders are found. And I mean, that's a huge blessing that somehow your community were able to accumulate that leadership, because there is a dearth of leadership in America. And, you know, I read lots of books on leadership, and leadership is important. And I mean, leadership is personal responsibility, right? I mean, how are you going to lead if you're not going to take personal responsibility? What are you leading? Where are you going? You know, the whole concept and notion of leadership is personal responsibility. Like, well, if nobody else is going to do it, I'm going to do it. Okay. Who's with me? Let's go. Like, not like, hey, you go do this. No, let's go. No, I'm going with you. You can follow me. Listen, you don't even have to go. I'm going. This is what I'm going to do. If you want to help, let's go. And I mean, that's leadership. And you know, that's fantastic that you have accumulation of leadership, and that is key. And I don't think there's a formula for that. I think that is a kind of like a self-filtering thing. And leadership attracts leadership. So, I mean, I guess that would be a, and from that standpoint, you know, I talk about this all the time too, is like, if you have the liberty and ability to speak the truth, and you have the freedom of speech to speak, if we do technically have that or don't have that, that's a whole different discussion, is what are you saying? And why are you going to pull punches? And why are you going to be pragmatic? And why, you know, if you don't speak the truth, you don't need free speech. If you're not going to speak the truth, like you don't need free speech because there's no point to free speech if you're not willing to say the tough things that need to be said so that people can change and so that people can say, oh, wow, that's me, you know, like, and, you know, a lot of times it hurts at first, like, oh, man, he just stepped on my toes. He's mean or whatever. But what he said was true, you know, and then once that rings true, like, well, I have two options. I have to change or I have to digress to my previous state and be a victim and blame everybody.
Yeah, I've always kind of believed a leader's job is done when the people say, look what we did. And wow. I apply that to everything I do. And, you know, at the end of the day, if, you know, if I can bring out the best in somebody, then I am their friend. You know, if I can get them uncomfortable, then I am their friend because that's the only place they're going to grow. And if we all do that to each other, you know, we're going to be at our absolute peak 100% of the time. And, you know, I think our system helps bring in those leaders, just how it's kind of self-selecting in a lot of ways. And, you know, they got to have skin in the game and then they have to be able to demonstrate. And if they don't demonstrate, it won't happen. You know, it's so funny. I have a great couple down here. We call him Indiana Mike, but they came from Indiana, which is why we call him Indiana Mike. But anyway, they had asked me very early on in this process, how do you get into the inner circle? And I said, it's easy. Get involved. There is no inner circle. It's the people who are involved make the decisions. It's that simple. It's not complicated. It's all it is, you know. And I get a lot of credit for, oh my gosh, how'd you guys build such a great community? But it's because it's self-selecting community. It does it for me. I didn't do it. And I think that's the important lesson in it, at least for me it is that if you, you know, establish that right culture and you do that right from the beginning, it fixes itself in so many ways.
And then you have a situation that with a couple and things go sideways, like how do you address that? Like, is that something that you personally do or?
Yeah. So depends. I mean, so we've had one of those in this entire experiment.
Wow.
And it was actually one. And it was a case of a guy who wanted to live out here, which by the way, I have no control over who buys what. If someone wants to buy land, they buy land. That's that. If they want to be involved in the community, they'd be involved in the community. But either way, so we had this happen. And so this guy asked, hey, I'm looking, you know, for a piece of property. Can I park my camper on somebody's land? So someone said, yeah, sure. Go ahead. That'd be great. And then he, you know, wasn't helping out, making a mess, blah, 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 blah. You know, that homesteader asked him to leave. He left, found another homesteader. Second issue, kind of the same thing. She called me crying, saying she didn't feel safe, blah, 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 blah. So I just picked up the phone and called him and said, dude, you're making this lady feel unsafe. Is that how you want to be known? I mean, you know, is this really where you want to be? You know, you talk about wanting to be part of the community and what you're doing is hurting the community. Is this how you want to be known? You need to get out of there. And he packed his stuff and moved out and that was the end of it, you know? And so I think honesty is a great solution. I think directness is a great solution. And, you know, we really don't have a lot of those problems. I mean, most people are here for a reason and they're here because they know that trusting themselves and putting their trust in the community members who invested so much around them. You know, I can't tell you how many millions of dollars have been spent in this area over the last 5 years, but it's a ton. You know, that's where they're going to put their trust. We just don't typically run into it all that much. But if I had to, I would.
Wow. That's incredible. Yeah, there definitely needs to be a documentary. I don't know if I've said that yet or not, but
yeah. Yeah, you know, I've had a lot of people ask me to write a book, a lot of people. And you know what's crazy about it is it really is, I don't know if we just got lucky or whatever it is, but I've been an entrepreneur my whole life and I just run my life the same the whole way. And fair, measurable, objective. I apply the same principles I applied in business as I apply into the community. And, you know, a leader's job is done when the people said, look what we did and be intentional. And if we're going to make any ground, we have to do it on purpose. And if you're going to sit around and waiting for the advertising bird to tell you what's wrong, you're going to get nothing done. And I just say it.
And, you know. Yeah. I mean, yeah. And you bring up, you know, we talked about this maybe a couple months ago about the whole entrepreneurial spirit. And that's what we've instilled in our children, this spirit of entrepreneurism. And there is, just like you said, you know, that's the way you've always lived your life. That's the way you do business, the way you do your life. And I mean, there's so much to that there that it's a very deep subject, and it's fascinating. And it reinforces the whole idea of personal responsibility, and why I've always been very successful. Prior to moving to Texas, I was always self-employed. Mm-hmm. And I was a financial planner for 11 years, but I was an independent contractor for two guys with about 60 million under management or something like that. Yeah. But when I moved here, I got a job for a construction company, and I went from their lowest paid, my first year, their lowest paid sales guy to their top earner, and I've held that spot for the last, I don't know, 8 or 9 years or whatever. But and everybody's like, wow, how do you do this? You know, I'm like, it's my business. I'm like, this is my business. I'm the first one there every morning. And you know, I hit all my numbers. I hit all my numbers second quarter. So the last 5 months I didn't even have to go to work. I mean, I've hit all my numbers, and I'm the first guy there every morning. And, you know, why? Because it's my business, you know, and I treat it like my business, and I get paid like it's my business. And, you know, it's that there's so much to that entrepreneurial spirit and the idea of personal responsibility, and personal responsibility leads to action. I don't think that can be overstated. I think, and there are plenty of personality types that aren't that person, and they're awesome too. And they do great things, and they're very complimentary and help. I'm not belittling people that don't have that drive and personality, because we need those type of people too. But there is, you know, that goes with education. I think that should be a part of the education process, is teaching entrepreneurship and, you know, in the education component, because, you know, that's the way we homeschool. One of our components has always been like, what are you interested in? Mm-hmm. Okay. And whatever you're interested in, we want to feed that. And that's going to become an integral part. And, you know, as you grow older, your interests will change, and you'll be more interested in some things or others, and that component will shift with you as you mature. But yeah, that's been part of our educational process, is entrepreneurship. I think that's huge. I think that is just a great point you're making.
Yeah, well, and I think building community is just about being an entrepreneur. I mean, it really isn't anything. It's the same thing, you know, wash, rinse, repeat. You know, I use this example all the time about, you know, why do you weed your garden? No, you weed it because you want the produce. You weed it because you want the result. Well, building community is no different. You know, when you're intentional in your garden, you have a great result. When you're intentional in building community, you have a great result. That's all it is, you know. Do it with a purpose. Get up, take one step in front of the other. The other thing is, you know, I make building community part of my everyday chores. Every day I do something about it, and it's just part of it. No different than, why do I go feed the chickens? Why do I feed the cows? Why do I do those things? I want the result.
Yeah.
Building community is no different.
And it's fascinating how simple, like, the ideas are so simple, you know, action is key, but the fundamental components are self-evident. They're common sense. And when you say something that just makes you're like, oh yeah, I never really thought about it like that, but yeah, that's brilliant, you know. And the most brilliant things usually are the most simple. Mm-hmm. And this has just been an awesome conversation. I appreciate you investing your time with us. If the listeners want to get more information, where can they find you, Tag?
Yeah, so they can find me on YouTube. My YouTube channel is Life Done Free, and we have Facebook pages and those things, although I'm not super great at staying on top of those. But you know, you can find me on the YouTube channel, but also I own a social media platform called freesteading.com. It's free for everybody. And it was built to help people find people where they live. And so there's state pages, and there's tons of people in, you know, like the Tennessee page has 800 people in it or something. You can go to freesteading.com and, you know, go yoke up there with, you know, other people. Cause I think at the end of the day, without community, none of it matters. And you just won't make it. It's just the way I believe. And with community, everything is possible. And so reach out to me. My email address is on my YouTube channel. You're welcome to email me and I'm happy to help. I do consultations, by the way, for free with communities all over the country who call me and say, hey, how did you handle this? Or how do you go about doing this? You know, because we've demonstrated here that we can have a fully functioning community. You know, we have two big festivals every year, one in the spring and one in the fall. Usually about 1,000 people, not always, sometimes 500, but 2,000 people show up and we have lots of good speakers. Joe Salatin will be down this next, in the spring at our next, you know, little festival. And we bring a lot of people in from Texas, believe it or not. I don't know, do you know Crunchy Mama Farms out of Texas?
No, I do not. Okay. Yeah,
they helped put on the Rogue Food Conference down there with Joel and Moody and all of them down there.
Hopefully I'm going to be, because of all the stuff we got going on, I had intended on being at the Rogue Food Conference, but because of all the recent stuff that's happened, I don't know if I'm going to be able to pull it off or not.
Yeah, I'm a little worried too. I don't think I'll be traveling much over the next few months, but guys, I would tell everybody out there listening in the audience that it's not too hard to build community. I promise you it can be done. You just got to be intentional. You just got to make it part of your day. It's really no more complicated than that. You know, I have met community members some of the weirdest ways. You know, I had a lady who now is a very active member in our community, her and her husband, who I met because they were loading chicken feed in the back of their trunk at a Tractor Supply, and I said hello.
Wow.
That's it. All I did is say, hey, can I help you?
You were just a nice human being.
It isn't any more complicated than that. I met a young couple at Home Depot loading tin onto a cart who were, I said, hey, what are you building? I'm building a greenhouse. Oh, really? What kind of greenhouse? And there you go. You know, off you go. Really. Yeah. And so it's just about being intentional. You know, I wear a free man hat on purpose. Many, many people come up to me and say, I love your hat. Many. It's just about being intentional. That's all it is. You can do it. You can do it. You can do it. And together, if we do it, we'll change the world.
Wow. Well, I think we can close it right there. That's about the best wrap up that we could give. I appreciate the encouragement, Tag. I appreciate what you're doing. I want to encourage y'all to go check out Tag and absorb the information that he is giving out for free. And it's awesome watching people making it happen, to have solutions, and they're not just crying about everything and the sky isn't falling, right? But they're leading and pressing forward. And y'all, this is a value for value presentation. So if you appreciate our information, go on over to thetexasboys.com. We love all y'all and appreciate the support. And remember, y'all, stay fearless, my friends.